Mob mentality. It's a real thing. That is an actual real thing, the mob mentality. So what happens is you got a lot of youngsters here who are just struggling with whatever they're struggling with, and then they attach themselves to this trans space, which makes them feel needed and wanted. And then they, what do? They start getting into the energy of it, because trust me, just go there one day, stick yourself right in the middle of one of those Facebook groups. You will feel the anger just... So they're all literally being plugged into an anger space, and they're all being plugged into this mob mentality. Everyone's a true scum. Everyone's a turf. Everyone's transphobic, even if they're in the community, if they don't follow these guidelines. And to me, I'm like, wake up, people. So I really force these kids to get out of those groups and to get out into the world.
Welcome to the Unspeakable Podcast. I'm your host, Megan Daum. My guest, Buck Angel, is an entrepreneur and a speaker and educator about transgender issues, particularly issues related to trans healthcare. Now in his late 50s, Buck transitioned from female to male in his late 20s and has more recently become a controversial figure in certain corners of the trans community. He talked with me about why this is, what it's been like to spend decades on masculinizing hormone therapy, and why he's worried about the number of clinicians now prescribing such therapy to young people after minimal psychological counseling. A couple points for the record. At one point, Buck refers to the entrepreneur Martine Rothblatt, who is the founder of a biotech company called United Therapeutics. He mistakenly calls her Martine Rothbaum. It's Martine Rothblatt. It's also possible from Buck's phrasing that it might sound as if he's suggesting Rothblatt is among the billionaire class. For the record, United Therapeutics was reportedly worth $7.1 billion as of this past March, but Rothblatt herself, according to Forbes, is worth $390 million. Minor detail. And with that, here's my interview with Buck Angel. Buck Angel, welcome to the podcast.
Wow, thank you. I'm really happy to be here, actually. Even though we've never met, you sound like such a cool person.
Well, likewise. I only have cool people on. So.
Right on.
It goes without saying. So you have a background as an entertainer, and now you do a lot of work as an activist and an educator. You counsel young people who are struggling with gender identity. But I think it's fair to say, I guess it's obvious in many corners, that you've run afoul of mainstream, or at least the most vocal community of trans activists, if you can call it a community. We're going to talk about who you are, what your background is, all of that. But first, I want to know how you characterize yourself as an activist. What are you advocating for and against?
So first off, thanks for that question. It's super important these days because for me, activism has always been about creating change through visibility, through voice, through discussion. And so I don't necessarily want to be attached to that label these days, as trans activism has become something that I don't necessarily agree with. So activism for me has always been about creating change. And I don't necessarily call myself an activist these days. I think more of a human rights, like, awareness person on some level. It kind of sucks because I've been in the LGBT community forever and I've been an activist in it forever, and it just feels kind of like a dirty word these days. So really my voice tries to advocate for people who, you know, don't fit in the box or feel different or want to just live their life. And it doesn't necessarily pertain to trans activism. I think it just pertains to wanting to find that space where you can live in life happy.
Your pinned tweet on Twitter says, this is how you describe yourself: I was born biologically female. I use testosterone to masculinize myself so I feel more like me. I had a legal sex change and now live as a male, all male pronouns. I am a transsexual and will never be biologically male, but I do live as a male. It's very simple. And you have hashtag Tranpa. That's what you go by. You seem a little young to be a Tranpa, but okay. Why do you call yourself a transsexual and not transgender?
Yeah, another good question. So when, you know, transsexual was really the OG, the old school term of people like ourselves who never felt like, I never felt like a girl. my whole, you know, I just didn't feel that way. And I had what we used to call a sex change. And that basically meant me getting, you know, my breasts removed, taking testosterone, masculinizing, just basically what you said. But what happened was this new term came in called transgender. And then I took on that label as well back in the day because it just became more of a fluid space because I really kind of more changed my gender than my sex because my biological sex will never change. So it just kind of resonated with me. But then we, you know, in the last 5 or so years, people started to take co-opt. I like to say co-opt this term of transgender and made it into an umbrella term, which now encompasses every variation of any gender variation, which is fine. No problem with me with that. But transsexual got taken off the table as a derogatory statement or a slur. So I realized, wait a minute here, I'm not the same of what's happening today. It's a different space and I'm a transsexual. And so for me, transsexual equates to a medical transition because of gender dysphoria. I was, you know, everything I do is under the medical space. I got, you know, I had a doctor diagnose me with gender dysphoria. I got surgeries and I take hormones and I live my life now as a male. So I think transsexual is more of a medical term and transgender is more of an identity term. So the people right. today are identifying as transgender. I do not identify as a transsexual or transgender. I identify as a man.
And when you say back in the day, when you took on the transgender term, when was that? So you are, I guess you're in your late 50s. I guess you are old enough to be a tramp. I like now that I am 50, I don't like the idea that anybody in our decade is old enough for that. So but let me just
right clarify on. That.
So when did you, you were a kid in the 1960s,
yeah.
in 1970s. So like, what's your background? Where are you from? What kind of life were you living as a kid? How did this kind of start to come about for you?
Yeah, so I was born in 1962 in Los Angeles, California, in the San Fernando Valley. I grew up there, 60s, 70s, you know, kid, total little surfer kid, very Southern California, surfer, skateboarder, all that. I was the first kid on the block to have Vans tennis shoes. I mean, I remember the whole thing. I had the most awesomest childhood because my parents really did raise me as a boy. And it wasn't, you know, we called it a tomboy back then. We didn't call it trans. We called it a tomboy because, you know, still today, they could be tomboys. You don't know which way kids are going. So that being said, that's how I was raised, and you know, and I was raised like a boy, and everything was totally great for me. So 26, almost 27 years ago, I started my transition here in Los Angeles, and I was the first guy to do that. Both my doctors had never seen a female to male transsexual before, so I was an experiment. I was 100% an experiment that, you know, actually worked out, which is pretty awesome.
And so, and you were in your 20s.
Yeah, I was in my late. Yes, that's right.
Okay. So yeah. Were you living as like a very masculine woman? I think you were a fashion model though.
Yeah, so I was. Oh my God.
Unless you were one of those androgynous waif models.
That's right. I was totally on the forefront, like in the 80s, on the forefront of what they called androgynous modeling back in the day. And so I was one of the very first people they like discovered me on the street. I was living as a gay woman, totally hardcore dyke, like dude, very masculine, androgynous. Nobody could tell if I was a girl or a boy. And so that was how we kind of lived back then. And there was nobody transitioning. So when I sort of got into a space of a therapist who finally, because every time I would go to a therapist, they would say, you're just a very male identified female. And today I don't even know what that means. But that being said, they did not push me into the trans space. They pushed me into the gay female space. So that's kind of where I lived for a while because there was no other space for me to live in. I was attracted to women. I was very butch and, you know, but I kept saying I feel like a man and nobody could help me. Nobody. And I suffered for a long time. I went into deep depression. I was alcoholic, a drug addict. I ended up fashion modeling in Europe because I got discovered on the street. Just one of those really crazy stories. But, you know, I went to Europe where they drink like mad. Oh my God. And so I got stuck in that drinking, fighting.
But they drink so responsibly and so in such a sophisticated, elegant way compared to American drunks.
That's right. But thank God it took me down and then all the agencies wouldn't work with me anymore. I was a mess and sent me back to the States and I ended up being homeless on the streets and smoking crack. I started prostitution. I mean, it's sometimes I think of my story, like how am I here? How did I survive? And it's really, I think a big testament to wanting to survive. Like I just felt like I had to survive.
Did you know about other transsexuals as you were growing up? I mean, there were a couple of famous cases. There was Renee Richards, right? The tennis player. I mean, did you look to people like her and say, well, this is possible, so maybe I can do this?
No way. I mean, we didn't even talk about it. It was, especially as a youngster, I mean, even 14, 15, I struggled so bad in school because I got teased. I got teased constantly. I was that little boy who was a girl, you know what I mean? And everyone made fun of me, and I would actually physically beat the crap out of the boys at school. So everyone would be scared of me because I was that really scary little girl who looked like a boy and was very mad at the world, right? Even though I liked my childhood. I can tell you that it was the bullying that kind of sucked for me, you know what I mean? And that's why when I see bullying today, it just really affects me. Because there was nobody for me to look at. There was no, the transsexual was Renee Richards, but we didn't talk about that as youth. And not one single therapist said anything to me about being transsexual, not one, until I met the one in my late 20s. But other than that, nobody said anything about me being trans ever.
And so had you had the idea that this was something you could do, or did the therapist kind of like recommend it and all of a sudden it was an option?
That's right. So my last therapist recommended, hey, wait, so here's the story, which is pretty emotional for me. So I walk into her office already defeated because I'm just, no, if I say I feel like a boy, she's just going to knock me down and say, well, actually you're a gay woman. So I was kind of walking in it. I was trying so hard to fix myself, going through therapy, really putting myself in that space because I had gotten sober at that time. And so I was really trying to work on my own self. And when I walked into this therapist's office, I just sat there for the first five sessions. And if anyone's familiar with therapy, you know, you go in, so you sit down, you have a space, a safe space to talk, but I just didn't feel safe. And back in the day, I would wear my cap over my eyes. I couldn't look at anybody. I was just so distanced from the world. And there I was sitting there for five sessions. And the fifth session, I said to myself, if I don't say anything, well, I'm wasting $100 a session. This is ridiculous. So I just said to her, you know, Casey, and I just started crying. I said, Casey, I feel like a man. And I was just prepared for her to say, well, she goes to me like this, and here it comes. She goes, I know. She actually said to me, I know. And I'm thinking, how does she know? I never even said anything, but she said, I know. And now we can try to fix this together because I don't know how to do this. So together we're going to try to figure it out. And because of her, I sit here today.
And what year was this?
Oh gosh, that was 27, 28 years ago. So yeah.
Okay. And yeah. How many years was the process? Did you start hormonal
Great
treatment
question.
First and then a bunch of surgeries came?
Yes. So what happened was here we are in the world of no digital media, no
right.
internet, no Google, no Yahoo, no cell phones. I mean, I think cell phones might've just started. I don't even think I don't, there was cell phones. So really I had no technology what you have today. And so we had what we call bookstores, right? Remember books? And I went
That's
to a
where
bookstore.
You picked people up, right?
That's right.
And the also bar you, or actually, the bookstore.
You actually get information that's worthwhile. And so right. I actually found I don't even know what I was looking for, my friend. I walked into that bookstore, just, I don't know why. And there it was. It was like, I always tell in my stories, like a beam of light, like, oh, like the whole God thing and a shining light. And there was this pamphlet book that I still have today. And it was homemade for trans women, for transgender women, so men becoming women. And it was a whole, and it says resource guide for male to female transgender. And I was like, what? And it just, and I opened it and there was a list of doctors, surgeons, everything for male to female. But I just reversed it. And with my therapist, we contacted my endocrinologist who said, I've never done this before. I have no idea what to do. I've only worked with men becoming women. And he said, you will be my guinea pig. If you're willing to do this, you'll be my guinea pig. And that was the beginning of it all right there. But I had to bring a note from my therapist. I had to have seen my therapist for 2 years. I had to have lived as Buck for 2 years, meaning socially transitioned, before I could start to take the hormones. And that was a very rigid, strict space we were in.
Yeah. And I don't know why this is coming to mind, but we don't have to, this doesn't require a long answer, but how are you paying for this?
Right.
I'm curious. Did you have insurance?
That's a great question. No, that's an excellent question.
There was no GoFundMe back then.
So no, there was nothing. I mean, I struggled. I got two jobs and worked my bum off. And that's why I keep telling these kids, you know, kids every day, they send me, can you please post my GoFundMe? And I said, look, I'm going to have a hard talk with you right now, kiddo, because nobody else is. First off, bad news. Nobody's going to give you money because why are they going to give you money? money. Nobody knows you. No one cares. So what's that going to do? It's going to create a space for you to feel bad about yourself. I hate those GoFundMe campaigns. They're horrible. These kids feel stressed out when they don't get any money. And I'm like, go, just go to Starbucks and get a job. They'll hire you. I swear to God. Like, you know, it's a space, I think, now of entitlement on some level. The kids don't see that.
Yeah. And okay, so fast forward to now, I'm sure you never imagined that there would be a moment when you would, when like you would be having to talk people out of thinking that they were possibly transgender. So, you know, you've been on my radar for a long time, and this topic really fascinates me for a variety of reasons. But I also sometimes worry that, like, I talk about it too much on the show. I think you're the third, maybe fourth guest that, you know, we've touched on some of these things. And, you know, the show is very much wrapped up in the idea of nuance. I mean, the title of the show suggests that we're talking about unspeakable topics, things that have been rendered taboo. But I try to emphasize that the reason most of these topics have been rendered taboo is that they haven't been addressed with enough nuance. They're not given their due complexity. And it seems like the conversation around transgender identities is like number one on that list. We cannot seem to talk about it in the sort of multifactorial way that is really required. And so we end up having like all kinds of like little conversations, and some people are talking about this way, and then some people are just ranting, and some people are saying it's you know, these are trans trenders. And they're all like a little reductive. So I'm curious, like, what do you think is happening here? I mean, it seems like this is less about gender identity than a sort of larger collective identity crisis or new forms of crisis around identity. Like, I realize I just blathered on for a while, but what are your sort of immediate thoughts in the abstract about this?
No, you didn't blab on, because what you said is so important for me, who is a transsexual, to hear from you, who's not. And what you are seeing, it really reflects what I think a lot of people want to say. And it reflects what I see as a elder transsexual person in a world where I started to see change as a guy who transitioned to, you know, live as a man. And the fight I've had to deal with it for the last, you know, 30 years has been insane. But I did it. And I did it to where I feel like I educated a lot of the world around who we are. And I felt like people were starting to understand what was happening. And, you know, I never pushed back in the way I see today. I mostly just said, okay, cool. You know, okay, cool. You don't want me to be a dude, right on. I'll just focus my attention somewhere else. And that worked for me. And I walked the world with so many friends and people all over the world who respect my voice because I didn't attack. So what I see today is something so opposite of who I am, what I am, where I am, what I believe the transsexual community has always been about. I feel like there's an agenda attached to it. I do not feel in any way, shape, or form it is any reflection on me and my transition. I feel that there is some form of a space there that is co-opting. I don't feel it's healthy. I feel that there's a lot of misinformation being put out there. And I feel, number one, that the most important part of this is there's no nuance in any of the conversation. It's either this or that. You take it or you don't. And they won't have conversation with people like you. And so it's actually, as my opinion is, it's hurting our community more than it's helping our community. So,
well, because the trans activism doesn't represent transgender people.
That's
it,
right.
Represents a particular activist community.
That's right.
And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and say like, well, this is another sort of, these are people struggling with a variety of mental health issues, but it is people yes. struggling with a variety of mental health issues. So like what, you know, that's one of the things that happens. Again, there are so many things going on at once. So like what kinds of, you have a lot of young people coming to you. Do you tend to hear from people who have transitioned and want to detransition? Do you hear from people who are just beginning the process? Like who's your sort of your audience? What's your kind of clientele? Because I know you're out there on YouTube a lot and you're really reaching a lot of people.
You know, I care about the kids. I'll tell you that, number one. The little older, when I say kids, I care about 16, 17-year-olds. You know, the 20-plus, those kids are in a whole other space. Those are the kids that don't necessarily like me so much. I think They feel like I'm attacking them. They feel as if what I'm saying is old school. They call me names like true scum, which means somebody who's, I guess, into, you know, that's very childish, right? So you can see they create names. They create these sort of names against people who don't. It's just a very childish space. So that's why I can't take it personally, because I just feel like there's this childish part attached to it. But that being said, the people and the kids who reach out to me are usually the youngsters of 16, 17, and then older in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and see me transitioned. Here's what I think is so mind blowing for me. I have a huge female, cisgender female fan base who just love me and really respect my voice. And I think it's because I am attached to my feminism, and I never lost that sense of being female, if that makes sense. I haven't lost it, and I regained it better than I ever did when I was a woman. And so I'm very attached to my space, my female space, because I saw what happens to women, and I know because I had it firsthand. So I think on some level, because of that, women really attach themselves to me and see that I don't want to create a divide. I want to create a coexistence, if that makes sense. So it's just I have such a wide variety, and I also have like gay men who love me. And, you know, I think the least amount right now is a very specific group of trans people that are really hateful towards me.
Well, another thing that's interesting about you, because you are a female to male trans person, that is what we're seeing this huge uptick in now, right? I mean, like you said, you had never heard of a female to male transgender person back in the day. It was always the other way, not always, almost always the other way around when it was discussed. So, and now we have this thing where, I mean, the statistics are really shaky. So, I've heard things like there's as much as a 4,000% increase in girls announcing trans or trans identities. Maybe it's trans and non-binary. Why do you think that it has shifted? Obviously, there are boys who are also going through this, but why do you think it's more girls now?
Yeah, it's really I can't tell you other than the fact that, you know, we have social media, which I will 100% tell you has some form of responsibility in this. And I think that it's hard to be a girl, harder than to be a boy. And it's, and I do believe that there's some of that shaming of our bodies. It's difficult to start growing boobs. You start becoming sexualized. Who wouldn't want to be a boy at that age? I mean, come on. And so that being said, that's really what I see the uptick in, is the fact that there's this more exposure to it. And the more exposure to it, it also is giving people a false sense of reality. And that's saying that if you start to do this, it will change you and you'll be a better, and you'll love life and you'll be okay. When that's complete utter nonsense, because I don't see mental health attached to this. I only see physical transition attached to this. So if you're not attaching a mental health aspect to this, why are you even touching children physically? That's gross. And so, you know, I had to go through two years. I told you, live as a man, walk the world that way. It was the best thing that ever happened to me. I've never looked back. And I know I sound old, and the kids are always like, well, that's gatekeeping. And, you know, I changed that. And I changed that specifically to call it safekeeping. I said, no, it is not. It's called safekeeping. It is in no way, shape, or form telling you you cannot transition. It is wanting you to transition if it's right for you. It's holding your hand. Don't you want somebody to hold your hand? And then once I started to get that into the kid's head and say, wait a minute here, you're looking at it the wrong way, they started to understand the importance of the first step, which is mental health. And as you know, that's not even part of the steps anymore. It's like you can just walk in and say, I'm trans, and start actually taking hormones. I'm mortified.
Yeah, wow. I want to talk about that, because we hear these stories. My question is that really true? I pulled up Planned Parenthood's official website. They have a page, gender affirming hormone therapy. They say Planned Parenthood. All right. Well, to be clear, no, this is their main national site. They're talking about a New York Planned Parenthood of, this is a region of New York, but I think this is just across the board. Okay. We offer quality, compassionate, gender affirming hormone therapy to our transgender and gender nonconforming patients using an informed consent model. And then it says, how old do I have to be to get hormones from Planned Parenthood? For our transgender hormone services, we see patients 18 and over. If you are under 18, we can refer you to other providers who can give you hormonal care. Okay, what does that mean?
So that means informed consent means called self-ID. So you don't even need to go to a therapist or anything. It's up to you to say when you walk into Planned Parenthood and you say, yes, I feel this. And they ask you like three or four questions. And how does Buck know this? Oh, well, maybe because a lot of people wrote to me and told me that who actually did it. They said, Buck, I didn't even need to go to therapy. I just actually walked into Planned Parenthood, sat down with a person who's an intake person. They asked me simple questions. And the next thing, within the hour, I was getting my prescription for testosterone. So
not hormone blockers, nope. But how is that without parental consent under 18?
That's right. Without parental consent. This is exactly right. So I think Planned Parenthood is also changing their thing because people are saying, because I know a 16-year-old that said that they actually walked into Planned Parenthood and got it. So I don't, they're putting that now on their website. Possibly that's the case because they could, I mean, how can you let a 16-year-old walk into a place and get testosterone? Isn't that illegal? Aren't they minors? Isn't this like, don't you need, but now all of a sudden you don't need your parents' approval to do anything. They're actually removing the parents from the whole equation.
I mean, is there any other area of medicine or mental health where you don't have to get parental consent for medication even?
Nope. Anything. And I'm just like, I'm laughing because I don't want to cry. Seriously, I'm shocked. You know, in Canada, it's really out of control. They even arrested a father who tried to say, I'm not comfortable with this and we need to figure this out. And they arrested him because he would not be okay with his daughter taking testosterone. And I'm like, wait a minute here. I'm a parent. I have an 8-year-old. Okay. I'm around kids all day long. I love kids. I just adore them. And I see how they act. And I'm like, you know, if my son decided today he's going to like, hey, dad, you know, I want to do this, I would totally let him do it. But socially, I would let him wear the dress, nail polish, whatever he needs to do to make himself feel like a girl. I would let him do it. But why are we letting kids make decisions without their parents? I'm actually just blown away by that. That really upsets me beyond.
And the term affirmative care,
right?
That means that the kind of standard of care is going to be we're taking people, even kids, at their word.
That's
what that means.
That's exactly what it means. And why I will be honest to tell you that this is very controversial in my community. I don't believe in gender affirming therapists at all, because what happens when you walk into a gender affirming therapist? What's the only thing they're going to talk about? Your gender. And I have, again, firsthand experience with a trans kid I work with here and his parents, and he's 8 years old, and they took him to a gender affirming therapist, and they said they were so disgusted because what's that thing called? I can never pronounce it, but it's the thing with the beads that you put on either side. Like it's a counting
machine. Oh, an abacus?
Yeah, yes. Abacus. And so basically they had that in front of the kid, and they were saying, how many beads are on the girl's side and how many beads are on the boy's side? And the kid was like, I don't feel like either. And the parent told me that the gender therapist was forcing them to pick boy or girl. And I'm like, wow, like that's what I'm talking about. There's no nuance within a gender affirming therapist. I mean, what? So that's why I believe that there's an agenda when you walk into a gender affirming therapist, as opposed to just a regular therapist who's very well rounded and understanding everything and then gives the kid a space there, right? A nuanced space to figure it out before you're just like, you're a boy or a girl. Let's get you on a hormone block.
Where has this cohort of gender affirming therapists come from? They're not all transgender themselves.
This is
a new generation of clinician. Have they been educated a certain sort of way? Are there like, you know, psychiatric institutes that emphasize this? Is social work school? I mean, my understanding is that if you go to social work school, it has essentially been captured by, you know, this kind of worst of critical race theory, for example, and critical race theory has uses, and I'm not going to like,
of course, you
know, put
of
it
course.
Down in
That's
any
right.
kind of blanket
right.
manner. But so where are these therapists coming from? Because they're not all trans themselves.
That's right. Great question. Oh my God. Great question. Yeah. I would love to fucking know too, because how are you being trained as a gender therapist, right? How do you even know? So I speak at a lot of mental health facilities. I speak, you know, to therapists who are coming into their space, and people do bring me in to speak to their, uh, to their, to their universities? Are there places that specifically deal with mental health? So I know I talk to a lot of up and coming therapists who are studying to become more gender therapists. So it's happening within that, those spaces, but how, where's the criteria and who writes that and who says this is right and this is wrong? Because I'll tell you what, if you give me the pamphlet of the criteria of what you need to teach, I will probably mark off so much of it as wrong. So you see, so there's
like what, for example, can you,
well,
think?
I would say that it's not fair for you to have that child sit there and you push them into these gendered spaces, as opposed to just giving them a space to say, well, today I feel feminine, or I just want to be a boy. Okay, great. Just be a boy. Like, just put on some boy clothes and run around the street. I guarantee you that would be a, such a healthier space to say, well, and get so deep with these kids. You know, get so deep with like the fact that they are trans. You know, this identity of trans is being so loaded on these kids. It's a loaded space, and it's not fair. And I don't think that they're giving the kids any space to grow within that space. They're like really pushing you, you know. And I say, I flip the thing on this when I say my therapist pushed me into the gay woman space, never gave me any nuanced space of, well, maybe you're just a boy. Never. So I see it from a space of me being put in that space, and I have experience in it. So yeah, I find it to be kind of, I feel like there's an agenda, I guess, attached to it.
It's, I can't ever figure out what the agenda is. What is anybody right. getting out of this? Do they right. believe right. on some cellular level that there have always been way more transgender people than we could have ever imagined, and they have been suppressed all of these decades and centuries? And it's, now is the moment to let people be who they are. Okay. So if that's not where they're coming from, mm-hmm. what is it? I mean, you don't know the answer, but mind-boggling.
And for me too. Imagine for me, this is my space. This is my community, for a lack of a better word. I hate that word now. So that being said, what did I start to do is I started to look at the money, and I started to look at how much surgeries are happening, how many hormones are being given out, how many people, doctors, are calling themselves trans surgeons with no formal education around it. And what does that mean? So I'm like, what? So I actually went to a website that's a stock website, and it says invest in trans surgery. It's going to become a $5 billion institution.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not even kidding. MoneyWatch. Just go to moneywatch.com.
This is a stock. Bitcoin or something.
You know, it's a stock website, MoneyWatch. It tells you where to invest your money, how to invest your money. And there it is in plain sight. Invest your money in trans surgery. It's the future of surgery. It's an estimated $5 billion industry. What? I'm like, what? The fact that they're telling me that right there just made a huge red flag for me. I'm like, wow, that's, so we're being monetized on something.
It sounds too conspiratorial to be true.
That's right.
I believe what you're saying.
Well, I'm only telling you what I've read. It's like, in my face. So of course, I don't want to think that either. Believe me, I don't. But then I'm like, why is it 4,000% of young girls? Where are the young boys? 4,000% of young girls transitioning at such a fast rate. You know, you're going to see a backlash from it. I hate to say it, but I will be the one to say it, because nobody in my community has the balls to say it. But you watch and see what's going to happen. And I've been saying it for years. It's a shame, because we're using these kids as pawns, where it's all become politicized. No one cares. If you cared about these kids, you would shut up. You would not put your kids on social media. You would quietly do this situation in a very family focused space. You know, I'm around all these kids. The parents I'm around don't post their kids on the internet. They keep it very quiet. They have a very specific group of people, and these kids are awesome, but they're not being held out on YouTube and like becoming Instagram stars at 10. And you know, that in itself makes me sick, because I see something else. I would never do that to my child, ever.
Well, another thing that's happening with the parents is that they're being told that if they don't,
that's right,
support their child unquestioningly, the child will attempt suicide or commit suicide. And those statistics are wildly inflated, are they not?
That's right. They're so inflated. It's gross. And the fact that they say that is gross, because what are they doing also? They're actually putting those words in those kids' head. Those kids don't know trans. They don't know what trans is. Now they're all trans at, you know, 10. Like, that's a word that's being given to them, right? And so also suicide. When you start, I want to see those statistics. because we just started transitioning kids. And I don't, you know, of course, I was suicidal at 16. I did try to commit suicide. I was put into a mental institution at the time. And so I do believe it's there, but I do not believe it's at the rate that they're saying. And it could be getting higher because now we're stressing these kids out. And if they don't get their medicine and they don't get their, they're just going to kill themselves. So on some level, we are also part of the responsibility of this. We're not giving them the tools to find their space. We're giving them tools to say, if you don't give it to me, I'm going to kill myself. And then how is that even a positive space to be in? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. No, it's been weaponized utterly. And I wonder, I sometimes wonder what is considered a suicide attempt also. Right. I mean, this is a whole other conversation.
No, you're right. It is. You're right. Yeah. It's difficult because I was suicidal. I did. I was a cutter. I used to take razor blades and cut my face, my arms, everything. I was that kid. Those kids exist, my friend. They are there. They're me. But they cannot be lost in this equation of kids just being non-binary, which is, again, fine. I don't care. Be all that. But it's 100% different than a kid like myself who actually wants to have a sex change and wants to just live as a boy, be that boy. Is getting lost in this whole equation of this transgender space that's being on some level co-opted. And I don't think the kids are given a fair chance to figure out their space.
But if you had been able to transition when you were 10 or 11 or whatever, if you were living in 2021 as an elementary school kid, would your life have been better?
Well, great question again, because, you know, I'm very close with my parents and we talk about it all the time. And they're just so like freaked out about what's happening. Even my parents who are so awesome. They're like, what's happening? They go to me. We would have never given you hormone blockers. They said that to me right away. They said, we would have never done that. We would have definitely kept you the way we did, which was buck. They did the most awesome job. Imagine in the 60s and 70s, what my parents had to go through.
Yeah.
And their friends would say stuff like this to them. They'd say, like, that's your daughter, not your son. How dare you do that? Then my parents had to deal with all that kind of nonsense. And they were like, basically, my parents are like, F you. As our kid, we'll do what we want because that's my parents. And so basically, I think that, you know, again, my dad said he would have never done it. And of course, at 10, I would have wanted to do it, right? And then imagine if my parents got knocked out of the equation and that I didn't need my parents' approval and I could have just started doing it. That's not okay because a kid needs an adult in their life. That's the whole reason we are parents. We're supposed to guide. We're supposed to be
helping. But you might have been the exception. You are a transsexual. You could have been the ultimate success story.
100%. And there's definitely success stories from back then. I'm sure we weren't giving hormone blockers back then, but we were trans, you know, there's some stories of kids being transitioned back in, but very few. But that being said, you know, again, that's the past. What if, right? We could do what if, what if, what if, but look at me today. I'm a pretty much consider myself a badass and I consider myself a guy who is very comfortable who I've become. I went through turmoil. I went through hell to get here. And on some level, it's made me that guy. So, you know, again, having a little pushback in life does create a better space for an adult, I think. You know, you got to push back on kids. Sure. You can't just let them have everything they want.
Why do you think there is so much anger and hostility in this particular space? Is it because a lot of people are really, at the end of the day, not entirely secure in their identity? I mean, it has the feeling often of somebody who's really kind of has not settled into this identity in any sort of comfortable way. So they're constantly proving themselves.
That's right.
And very threatened by people who, for instance, change their mind or detransition.
Oh my God. So then we got that. We'll just talk about that hopefully in a minute. But that being said, mob mentality, it's a real thing. That is an actual real thing, the mob mentality. So what happens is you got a lot of youngsters here who are just struggling with whatever they're struggling with. And then they attach themselves to this trans space, which makes them feel needed and wanted. And then what do they do? They start getting into the energy of it because trust me, just go there one day, stick yourself right in the middle of one of those Facebook groups. You will feel the anger. So they're all literally being plugged into an anger space and they're all being plugged into this mob mentality. Everyone's a true scum. Everyone's a TERF. Everyone's transphobic, even if they're in the community, if they don't follow these guidelines. And to me, I'm like, wake up, people. So I really force these kids to get out of those groups and to get out into the world. I did not transition to be trans. I transitioned to be a dude and walk the world and have lots of excellent friendships with people and create products. And, you know, I'm an entrepreneur and I created all this on my own without you know, without worrying that I was trans. So I think we have this idea now that you have to latch on to this or you're not trans.
Yeah. I mean, gender identity is not a personality. It's not a political affiliation.
<That's right. laughs>
It's not, it's like just one part of you. Do you think that part of what's happening is that the gay rights movement has basically won its battles? Like, you know, that there was a lot of progress on that front that happened very quickly. And so now we've got organizations like GLAAD, even the ACLU, which is a dark shadow of its former self, really, really like signing on to this ideology that is shared by so few people. I mean, this is really a tiny, tiny sliver of the population that believes this kind of, I don't want to say cult-like, but it does have that flavor. Why do you think these big institutions that used to be, you know, associated with LGBT, but the old T kinds of activism have gone over to this side?
Wow. I mean, that is such a question that everyone wants to know. You know, I used to be a big supporter of the ACLU, and then they got that Chase Strangio dude who's supposed to represent the trans community.
Who's not even trans, it's my understanding. Is that right?
No, he's non-binary, right? So he's non-binary, but now is under the trans label. So now people are like trans non-binary, which to me makes no sense. But again, I don't care. It's not my space. I'm a transsexual. You guys can have it. I gave them all of that. I will never be in that space. And but my point being is that he's now speaking for the community, which isn't fair, because a lot of the crap that comes out of that guy's mouth is false information. And I actually challenged him and I told the ACLU, you're going to have yourself into a bad space. This guy is actually saying stuff that represents the ACLU that is actually false information. The next thing I saw, he had to take it off of his profile. His profile now says all comments are my own or something. And it's not representation.
What kinds of things was he saying?
The number one thing I can't stand that this guy says, the number one thing that I just cannot, biology is not real. I'm like, what? He goes, and trans women and trans men are biological men and women. I'm like, what are you doing? Do you know how hurtful that is? It is so goddamn hurtful for somebody like me. I was born a woman, whether you like it the heck or not. I don't care. That's the reality of my story and the reality of a transsexual person. I would not be a transsexual. So what you're doing is you're telling me I'm not really a transsexual when you say shit like that. And then what you're doing is you're also discounting the rest of the world, which happens to be like 99%, 99.9% of the world is biologically male and female. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, right. And also, I mean, sometimes this question of intersex comes up.
Right.
I mean, there are genetic variants.
Well, yeah, that's like 1% of the population. That's not even it doesn't even really it's no effect. But when he starts saying shit like biology isn't real, oh my God, that just affects everything. And it's wrong. It's wrong information. And that's not okay. I'm not cool with that because that's not true.
We're going to pause here for a brief message.
Hi there. My name's Paul Shirley. I'm a former professional basketball player turned writer and also the founder of a thing called The Process. I'm honored to have a few seconds within Megan's podcast to tell you what we do at The Process. If you're anything like most people, you're scattered, overstimulated, and frustrated by your inability to concentrate for long periods of time. Texts, emails, social media, and somehow you're expected to make progress at your job and on your passion projects. It's a lot. This is where The Process comes in. I believe that everything worth doing requires a process to do it, a set of habits and routines that allow you to access sustained periods of deep work. Through virtual co-working and productivity coaching, that's what we do at The Process. We help people like you learn to be productive, not busy. And here's the best part. You won't be doing this alone. Inside our platform, you'll meet people from all over the world, people who are dealing with the same frustrations you are, and people who want the same things you do: structure, accountability, community, and most of all, progress on the projects most important to you. We'd love to have you. To learn more, come see us at createyourprocess.com.
What do you make of the non-binary phenomenon? Because isn't there sort of a logical fallacy there that if you're going to identify transgender as something, meaning that you're either, you are one sex and you're going to become the other one. Then non-binary comes into the equation and it says there's no, well, maybe that's not true. Maybe I'm oversimplifying this. Like, but maybe why can't everyone just be non-binary?
Right.
Like, would that solve this?
Well, yeah, I think really what happened, and I always say it all the time, was it was the shit show of the world when they made transgender an umbrella term. And I said it. I go, you guys are going to completely destroy what's happening here because now you've opened it up to anybody and everybody. You can self-ID. You can come in and be trans. You can do all this stuff. It's literally taken away for people like us who have to struggle, have to have gender dysphoria. Now you don't need gender dysphoria to be trans. Well, then you're not trans. you're non-binary.
They say that's the new rhetoric to be trans.
Yeah,
but what does that even mean? You just say
right.
you're.
What does it mean?
I feel like a man, but I'm going to say I'm a woman. Is that what that means?
Yeah, I mean, when you say you don't have...
Yeah.
Well, they're basically saying you don't need gender dysphoria to be trans, which makes zero sense. It's like you don't have to have cancer to have cancer. Like, what are you talking about? It's like everyone's going to walk around saying I have cancer, but they don't really have it. It's pretty much on the same space. I don't understand. That's why I have no issues with non-binary. I don't care. That's an identity choice. But what I don't understand is why are you putting it under the transgender label? You see what I mean? So now you're co-opting a space that is really relegated for a very specific group of people who do not feel I'm a binary space. And so why would I be with a non-binary person? Because that's not true. I believe in the binary and I am a binary. I went from a woman to live as a man in the binary space. So non-binary doesn't make sense that it's under trans because trans means from one gender to the other. So isn't that what you're saying as well?
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense.
Do you think that sex stereotypes have intensified over the last couple of decades and made it maybe more difficult for a masculine woman to just be tomboyish, be a kind of butch lesbian? And so, I mean, because I've had this conversation with Katie Herzog, she's actually come on the show twice to talk about some of the stuff. And it's like, you know, there are no more butch lesbians. We had a kind of, you know, it was a little tongue in cheek, but it was kind of true. Like the lesbians are going extinct. She says she hears from like, you know, women in their 20s who are lesbians who have never actually met, or I don't know what they are. They're non-binary. They've never actually met a lesbian because all the women they know who would otherwise be lesbians are non-binary.
Wow. Yeah, it's a new thing. It's a new thing and it's happening, but I don't think it will always be that way. And I totally notice it too. So, you know, I identified as a gay woman 30 years ago. And so imagine that. And then I decided to transition. Everyone freaked out on me. The whole lesbian community freaked out on me. They disowned me. They told me to get out of here. They called me a traitor, you know, and all of the things. And then, you know, fast forward 15 years later after my transition, a ton of those women came to me and were like, we want to transition now. So how do we do it?
Oh my gosh.
Like, wow. The same women who wrecked me. So, you know, I don't know. I can't put my mind around it other than everyone's different. Everyone has their own process of finding their space, all of that. But I'm wondering why so many butch women now are claiming this space when we really used to celebrate that space. We celebrate it. It's hard. I lived as a butch woman for half my life, basically. It was difficult. People don't like butch women. They don't like feminine men and they don't like butch women. And so those two spaces get really pushed. And I think because of that, on some level, maybe it's pushing them to take on the trans space because they'll be more accepted.
Is that true, though? I mean, do you really think there's less bigotry toward trans people than toward non-gender conforming cis people, to use that term?
Yes.
Okay.
The cis label, whatever that is. So I, on some level, I do because of my own experience. So you have to understand, I lived as a butch woman. And now that I live as a man, holy crap, it's night and day. I have a whole other life of being this masculine person. And now I'm looked at as a man. So I walk the world that way. Try walking the world as a butch woman. It isn't easy. People do get mad about it. They do throw rocks at you. I mean, I got beat up here in West Hollywood a lot. I mean, I had physical violence at me because I was so masculine as a woman.
Even in West Hollywood.
Oh my God, even in West Hollywood. I mean, I can tell you stories, man. Wow, it was horrifying back in the day. They would chase us with baseball bats. They would literally come down here from other places and wait for the weekend. And these guys would be in trucks with baseball bats and jump out and just beat the crap out of all of us. It was insane. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess it's notable that countries like Iran that have very high rates of gender transition surgery, it's not because there are so many transgender people there. It's because it's illegal to be homosexual.
Yeah, that's so right.
They would rather you change your gender than be gay.
So that's a great segue to what I feel, and it's again my opinion, is that I think that the world has an easier time with people in a gendered space than they do with people in a sexual space. And it's why gay people still have a hard time in this world. And Iran is a great example of that. They literally will pay for your sex change because they'd rather for you to be a man or a woman than to be a gay person. That says everything to me in the world that homosexuality is still a space that is so difficult to be in. We are not free. As much as people think, oh, we have so many gay rights. No, we don't. You can still walk down the street here in West Hollywood holding hands and get the shit beat out of you. I see so much homophobia here all the time. And so it's misinformation to say that we have gay rights now. You know, I see more trans rights happening at a faster rate than gay rights.
Oh, that's so interesting. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, as a straight person, I always just was assuming, well, there's gay marriage and...
Well, yeah, we have
gay
that.
Gay people have been heteronormalized.
That's
like
right.
In a sort of Ellen DeGeneres mode. So
that's right.
Therefore,
that's right.
The work is done.
But at the same time, you know, at the same time, trust me, watch two men walk into a movie theater holding hands and watch people just get nervous and freaked out. But if a trans woman and a trans guy walked in, people will probably just be super chill because it looks like a man and a woman. And I know that for myself. I walk the world with a woman now and we look like a straight couple and nobody says anything to us. Yet we are far from a straight couple, right? But it's just this presence that we give into the world. So I feel like the world is less, it has less of a hard time because it's all visual, right? I think the world is really visual and what they see is what they comprehend in their brain.
Oh yeah, that's a really good point. So we're talking about legislation a little bit. Let's talk about some of this anti-trans legislation because I find this difficult to follow. Okay, correct me if I'm wrong. We're basically talking about three areas that would be bathroom bills, issues around sports, and I guess spaces, you know, spaces like prisons, women's shelters, that kind of thing. Okay. And access to care. So I want to, again, touch a little bit back on what we mean when we say access to care. But am I wrong to think that like a lot of these bills are really incoherent and inconsistent? I mean, the bathroom thing especially feels like a red herring since trans people have been using the bathrooms of their choice for centuries. The sports piece is complicated because the stakes are much lower in youth sports.
Yep.
In elementary school, that's seemingly negligible. Mm-hmm. High school and certainly college.
Different.
You know, different. Very different.
That's right. That's
so, you know, there's not a lot of data on this. And it's actually, you may have noticed it's often cited that I think it was the Associated Press. They called 24 state legislators who had sponsored trans sports bans and found that none of them could name any cases where this was actually a problem coming up
in
sports. I mean, we really hear about it or it's kind of dealt with on a very local community level.
That's right.
So what do you think about this legislation? Right. I mean, let's talk about access to care. So what does that mean? When they say they are saying that trans people cannot have access to medical care, what does that really mean?
It's rhetoric because that's not true. Because again, right? It's a blanket statement. It's a very deep conversation. We are not a monolithic community. All of us have different needs, different wants, different ways of transitioning. So how can you lay that language down on just boom? Right? Because so there's that. That's this again, all this coming from my own opinion as an elder trans person and someone who watches the system. That being said, I think that they're saying I think they're talking about from under 18. So the laws they want to pass are for people under 18. They don't want to be giving them hormone blockers. They don't want to give them access to hormone blockers. But what else? I want to see the rest of what that says. Because does that mean that not one child can take hormone blockers? Or does that mean that now you got to go through a system, which is what the trans community doesn't want you to have to go through? The trans activists don't want you to go through a system. They want you to be having whatever you want. as a human right, every trans person should get whatever they want, which I'm like thinking, wait a minute, that's not, that's just a blanket statement because all of us are not the same. So I think that's first off what I think it means. And I think that I'm on board with the fact that we need to limit whatever we're doing in these spaces to kids under 18, but we need to have a system put in place. I don't think those kids shouldn't have access to healthcare. They need it, but we need to understand what that means. It's not just black and white. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Hormone blockers have a lot of uses. I mean, hormone blockers are used for precocious puberty.
That's right.
This is kind of an off-label use. Way of blocking puberty for kids who have
Well, guess what? All the testosterone I've been taking for the last 27 years is off-label. All of it. It's not made for people like me. We've been using it and still tons of health problems. You know, I can just tell you so many health problems I've had from having testosterone in my body for 20. I'm like the first recorded case in the history of trans men of having atrophy in my, you know, uterus and all of that because of long-term use of testosterone. And I almost died. Yet no, they're still doing the same exact thing they did to me, to these youngsters. And these youngsters are calling me up or saying, Buck, oh my God, help me. I'm having these pains. I'm like, it's atrophy. Isn't your doctor talking to you about it? No, they never said anything. I'm like, wow. So I have actual recorded cases of this happening today. So why is it happening when I'm literally put a YouTube video out to all the doctors in the whole wide world that you can stop this if you do this one thing? And they're not listening to somebody who has a lot of experience. So what does that even mean?
Yeah, I want to talk about the medical side in a second, but just since we're on this legislation, is there any of these, you know, this anti-trans legislation that the activists, you know, get, they say they're literally murdering us, they're literally erasing our humanity, et cetera. Is there any of this that harms you? How might this harm you, make your life worse?
Well, it can harm somebody who actually really is struggling with gender dysphoria. I will 100% say that. If they do not have access to any type of trans healthcare, yes, it's going to mess them up. I don't want them to go through what I did. So that's first off, we need to understand that I don't want any kid to struggle the way I did if they don't have to. But I also want to make sure that this kid is in the right space at the right time and has the right healthcare, not just some willy-nilly, let's give them hormone blockers. So we need to have a structure put in place. We need to have mental health care attached to it. We need to have a long-term space attached to it. Like, how are we going to do this? You know, there's none of that. And so why are they basically your child is an experiment. That's the fact of it right now. If you're going to put your child on hormone blockers, you are now putting your child into an experimental space. And if you're willing to do that, that's your space. I can't, but I think we need to be more honest about that. And we're not. We're not being honest about the fact that this is an experimental space. It's never been done before. Except for, I'm sorry, in Netherlands. They did a whole thing of it in the Netherlands. And it actually was a really great experiment. So they learned that these kids need mental health care. They learned that these kids need to start with mental health care. They need to be in a very loving environment. They did 30 trans kids and all of them, pretty much none of them detransitioned. And they all came out totally great. But it was a long-term process. It wasn't, you know, they didn't just slam this into them. Some of them, I think actually some of them did leave the program, but really the ones who made it through are now thriving adults and moving on. But, you know, I think that they also just made a statement where they actually said that hormone blockers aren't tested enough, puberty blockers. So they're actually saying that we shouldn't be giving them to kids right now.
Yeah. So I'm confused about the hormone blockers too, because I've heard like people who are pretty, you know, pretty expert on both sides. Some people say, they're fine. All they do is give you time. It buys you time to figure yourself out. It shuts down puberty. Other people say it has lasting effects. I mean, I have to say that I can imagine how awful it would be to be a young kid who really was feeling that his or her body was developing in the wrong direction and that you're running out of time. With every passing year, it's going to be harder to pass if you decide to transition later. And I can imagine it would be excruciating not to be able to just stop the clock and take hormone blockers. So tell me why it's not as simple as that.
It's not, because again, all of us are different. Number one, number two, what if you start to do it and you change your mind? How do we know what you just did is not going to affect your reproductive system, your bone growth? I mean, what brain? I did actually read about somebody they had on hormone blockers, a youngster and they tested his IQ. And then within 6 months, his IQ had dropped 20%. So what? Are we putting that information out there? As a parent, I would never want to put my kid on hormone blockers if I knew his IQ was going to be messed with, number one.
But haven't they been using them for precocious puberty forever?
That's right.
So that, don't we know from that?
So I know. I have no idea. All I'm reading is this one specific thing. But what ages? Again, those are very specific cases, right? And then how long have we been giving them the hormone blockers? There's a process involved. Some kids might need it for 2 months. Some kids might need it for 2 years. It's a very much of an individual space. And what I'm hearing is a very blanket statement. What you said, it'll give them time. It will da 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 da. But they're not a herd of cows. These are individual children who actually think and walk and talk differently and have different ideas of what gender is and all of that. So, yeah, I mean, do you want your kid to suffer because they're going to grow boobs? Well, what does that even mean, right? I mean, God, it's just, I mean, I'll tell you what, as a guy who struggled, I don't think I would put my child on blockers right now. I think I would have them struggle a little bit and deal with what's happening. I would get them a binder. I would get them things that, you know, and just in case they made that choice to change back, that we didn't have to deal with the surgery. I mean, I saw a 13-year-old kid get top surgery. What? Come on, man. That's like, this is really weird.
So when people contact you and say they want to change their mind, they are de-sisters or de-transitioners, what kinds of stories do they tell you?
Oh, horrifying. I cry. I like cry because I never looked back. So can you imagine for a person like me who actually changed my life for the better? I have the most amazing life. And then when you hear a kid say to me, I made the wrong choice and I removed my breasts and I got a hysterectomy and I have a mustache and I'm really a woman. How do you think that makes me feel? Devastated for this child because it should never have happened. And so I don't want to use the word side. I'm very empathetic towards these children because I have the same experience of them and it worked out for me, but it didn't work out for them. And I know why it didn't. I'm pretty much look at every single one of these guys and people who wrote to me or talked to me. They all had the same kind of comment, which was they just pushed me through. Nobody gave me a lot of mental health care. Nobody asked me these certain questions. I just walked in, took hormones, got surgery in a year or two. And, you know, on the flip side of that, I want to say that these kids were probably never trans. And so here they went and they got surgeries where actual trans guys are actually waiting for these surgeries and have to be, you know, 2 and 3 years down the road. And these poor kids got that surgery that could have been given to a kid that actually needed the surgery. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening here that's just so messy and it's going to backfire on us. And already the world is seeing this. It's being exposed everywhere now. And so we're starting to talk about detransitioners, which my community has been trying to hide for years. And I've been very attached to them because I believe that they're so necessary in order for us to create a better space for the future of us.
Yeah, they're really a threat. You know, we're recording this on May 24th. Last night, 60 Minutes ran a segment about, well, I wasn't actually able to watch the whole thing because I could just watch little snippets online. But I think I heard that initially it was supposed to be about detransitioners. And there was so much blowback kind of in pre-production that they ended up making it about transgenderism just more broadly, which you can't really do in 17 minutes or even 60 minutes, really. They had maybe a handful of detransitioners, but most of the segment was taken up with activists and, you know, the CBS making damn sure that the fact that they were having transitioners was not, you know, giving any kind of license for the wrong side to weaponize the detransitioners and kind of turn the whole thing into an expression of bigotry. I mean, it's such an unsophisticated mentality that somehow to acknowledge the existence of people who went through this in a different way and maybe changed their mind is to erase the existence of trans people. It's like, I think a third grader can kind of like balance that logic. And I don't know if it's just the blunting effects of social media or a kind of willful determination not to engage with it. Is that because some of these activists, you know, they're obviously there's like a constellation of you know, issues going on with their mental health and personality and just kind of tastes and interests. Is there an overlap with, I mean, we know, I think statistically that there is an overlap between autism spectrum and gender dysphoria. So do you have any thoughts about that?
Well, no, because I know nothing about autism other than the fact that, yeah, people are being now attaching autism to transgender, which, what is happening here? It's not that simple. And so, yeah, maybe there's a lot of autistic kids claiming they're trans, but remember what I said earlier. These kids are also saying they don't need gender dysphoria to be trans. They don't want to transition. They just want to identify as trans, which is so opposite of who and what I am and where I come from. So that's where we really need to also have the conversation of there are two different trans people now. There are the there are the people who medical transition, and there's people who do not medically transition and consider themselves to be trans without any mental health issues. And so I'm not attached to that. I have a mental health issue. I have an actual problem that I needed to fix through medicalization. So that being said, yeah, I did kind of watch real quick the 60 Minutes thing, and I did see a lot of detransitioners on there. And I actually did see, and I had actually spoken to the producers early on, and I knew that they were already nervous to do this, and they were going to get a huge amount of backlash because I'm already reading a ton of it. The ACLU, GLAAD, all of them are just like dumping all over them when I find it to be a very important subject that we discuss. And so I'm not represented by GLAAD, and I'm not represented by ACLU. And as a transsexual person, I think that that conversation needs to be had. And I have to say, It does take a lot of balls for 60 Minutes to do that because they're going to get tons of backlash from it. But that being said, I'm so happy because they were actually going to pull it. They weren't going to do it. And so I think that they finally just decided that they needed to do it. But I'm going to tell you, I think they gave detransitioners a voice on there. And so what I saw today was an article in, is it Jezebel, I think? And I was so upset. I'm going to write this woman who wrote the article. She was really discounting one of the detransitioners on there. I think it's Grace. And she kept saying alleged. She kept using that word alleged. And I'm like, what? This is that person's story. This is actually a person's.
Can you imagine if they would say that about somebody who was gay or
yes!
any other
That's
identity?
Right. That's right.
It would be
That's right.
Unthinkable.
Unthinkable. And I was disgusted. And right now, if you saw me, you would see my hair standing up on my arms. I'm so mad. I'm like, how dare you discount this poor woman who went through hell and back and has the balls, for lack of a better expression, to stand up to the world and say, I did something that should never happen to somebody else. It takes huge guts to do that. And this woman who's not even probably, I don't even know, I'm sure she's not trans. She's one of those allies. Is like this, she kept just questioning this woman's voice. And I just was so appalled that this person got to write that. So I'm going to.
Well, there's a lot of signaling that goes on.
That's right.
So when you have these conversations, people need to, whether or not they secretly want to hear the conversation or even agree with a lot of what you're saying, if they're part of this community, they need to signal to their peers that they are on the right side.
That they're on the right side. That's why it's so gross. How dare that they've done this to my community? How dare that they're making people choose sides? How dare that they're making people say that if you don't do this, you're transphobic? How dare that they make people have this idea that we are not, no, biology doesn't exist, that no matter what, if a child says they're trans, they're trans. How dare, would you question any child if the child said something? Of course you would. You would say, wait a minute here, let's sit down and have this discussion. And so that's why I will not be on board with these trans activists. They're not activists. They're on some level, it feels very culty to me. And I will not be a part of a situation that does not reflect my own space.
Yeah. And I can only imagine how many parents out there were so grateful to 60 Minutes for doing that segment. I mean, people are really, really befuddled. They are incredibly concerned about their kids. They want to do the right thing. But they're not even allowed to kind of have the conversation. It's funny. So I started this podcast last August, basically. One of my earlier guests is a gender dysphoria therapist named Sasha Ayad. She's wonderful. She has by far, that interview has by far the most downloads of any interview I've done on this show and the fewest comments.
Wow.
Nobody has said a word about it.
What?
A couple people. Yep. The ratio of between the listens and the public reaction is like a yawning gulf. and it's so telling. Because people are really they're ravenous for this information. And she talks about this in such a careful and compassionate and genuinely informative way. But everyone just kind of secretly, you know.
Well, people are scared. I mean, the backlash is insane. I do not even understand the power that this community has and where it came from. We're so small.
That's the fundamental question.
That's
right. Where is it coming from?
Because
it's in the school. But it's like, why is, you know, your average 7th grade teacher in a middle school so gung-ho behind this? I mean,
because she's being told that if she does not, she will lose her job. So seriously, I'm not kidding. There is money behind this. Do you know that there are very powerful trans women out there who have a lot of money, like billions. And if they give you
really?
100
who are we billions,
I'm not, oh, wow.
Can you
really?
Name names?
There are
know.
A lot.
I thought there were no billionaire women. Are you
oh,
kidding?
Oh, yeah, there is trans women.
Only they're trans women, right, yes. They have to start out as men in order to catch up to the billionaire
Some
class.
Some own, yes, big pharmaceutical companies. They own all, they're dumping tons of money. Some they transitioned late, right? What's her name? Martine Rathbone. Do you know who that is? Martine Rathbone.
No,
she's like a billionaire scientist. She's the one who believes transhuman. We're all transhumans. She pushes a huge agenda. She has billions. Look her up. Martine Rathbaum, I think her name is, a trans woman. She gives a ton of money to organizations. So when a school gets a $500,000 donation, how do you think that school is going to act now, right?
But remember a public school? I'm talking about kids in public school systems.
Yeah, of course. You don't think they're donating to certain spaces that now create – it's money. There's no other way. We live in America. We live in America. What is America about? Capitalism, money, money talks. I know. I work in institutions that are about money. Cannabis, sexual wellness. It's all about money. What's going to sell? What's going to make you money? They don't really care about the underlying space. Same with this. That's what I see in this. I see a lot of money attached to this. And that's the part that scares me, because it's like, why has this become such a space of money? Why has this become such a space to push? Why are we pushing so many people to transition? That weirds me out. When it used to be the opposite way, we used to say, wait a minute here, let's have a little bit of time and see what happens with this child. And then maybe they're just going to grow out of it. We all know many of them grow out of it.
I hope you'll forgive me. I noticed that you have a birthday coming up when I was researching you.
Right on.
you're going to be 59.
That's right.
Very soon.
That's right. That's right.
How is your health? How has your health been affected by,
thank you,
by your transition?
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate that question. So I suffered for a little while, 15 years ago. I had what we call atrophy, and you know, it basically fused my uterus and my cervix together, and I got an infection, and no one could figure it out. And for 3 years, I suffered until I became septic and almost died. And then it became a big deal, and I got a major hysterectomy, and I would have alleviated all of that, number one, by getting a hysterectomy, and by number two, by getting estrogen supplements given to my body. So that was my most, insane space. And it was horrifying. I was out of commission for a year because of it. And so from that, I have not had a lot of really other health problems. That was the most drastic. I can say that I do get moody. Things happen. I'm not sure what's going on with my body after 27 years of testosterone. You know what I mean? Like sometimes I feel on, but you know, I go to the doctor and it's just like I'm just having a regular checkup. So again, who knows what's going on? But that being said, I don't drink alcohol. I don't do drugs. I use cannabis. But other than that, I eat well. I work out. I very much focus on my health. And I try to do that as inspiration to other trans people, because I don't see them focusing also on their physical health. I only see them focusing on transitioning to be a man or a woman or whatever that means. But, you know, our health is very important, because we are, again, experiments, and who knows what's going to happen.
And did you say you have a son? You have an 8-year-old?
Yeah, I have a son. I have an 8-year-old. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's
so
great. He's amazing.
What kind of life does he have? Where does he see?
So I'm not.
You talk about these issues? Like, no, I mean, just in terms of like, does he go to school and everyone gets excited when somebody announces that they're questioning their gender?
Uh-huh. So he goes to a private school over here in Hollywood. And so he has actually two kids there who are trans, which is so interesting. And they actually, I'm not in agreement with what happened. You know, they announced that this kid is trans to the whole school. And I'm like, what? why would you do that? That's when I became friends with the parents, because I was like, wait a minute, you're putting your kid on display and the kids don't care. The kids were like yawning. They were like, who cares if he's trans? Oh, they had to do it because he was a girl who became a boy and they wanted to make sure that he was going to be using the boys' room. So they said, you know, Eli's going to be using the boys' room from now on. And then my son's name is Jonah. Jonah's all like, we care. I'm just thinking, that's so awesome. Kids are so great. They're like, we don't care. But so he knows I'm trans, but he doesn't know what that means. He does not know what that means at all. We said it. I said I was born without a penis. And he's like, really? I'm like, yeah. And he's like, okay, can you help me fix this toy? He's just like, whatever. He doesn't care. He's just like, I always want to be honest with that kid. And I always want to be sort of forthright because, you know, I am somebody he might see on the internet one day or something. You know, I think it's important for him to be educated around all this stuff. He has a gay uncle. So he's pretty, you know, we live in LA. So it's pretty diverse stuff going on here. And you know, I'm very honest about everything with this kid. So it's just amazing having a kid in your life. You get to see so many things.
Well, Buck, this has been really an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for taking all this time and talking about this. And maybe you'll come back sometime.
I will.
We can.
We've only
skimmed the surface. I feel like.
So. I know. We got to talk about sports, and we got to talk about the bathrooms and the prisons and all of those spaces, because you know it's not black and white. That's just what I'm going to leave it there. It's not black.
No, it's really complicated, and it's just never. It never seems to be addressed with any kind of kind of layered nuance or any sort of layers or any of that.
You're right.
So, thank you for fighting the fight, and happy birthday.
Thank you.
That was my interview with Buck Angel. He's an entrepreneur and educator in the area of trans healthcare. He's also been a groundbreaking figure in the porn industry, which we didn't get a chance to talk about in this interview, but that you can learn more about in various places, including in a documentary about his life called Mr. Angel, which was released in 2013 and premiered at the South by Southwest Film Festival. You can also visit his YouTube channel at Buck Angel and his website, buckangel.com. You've been listening to the Unspeakable Podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit the Patreon page at patreon.com/theunspeakable. This is a great time to join because most likely in the coming weeks, the podcast will begin to have more advertisements. If you join the Patreon at any level, you will get ad-free versions of the show, plus early access to the show. If you join at the $10 a month level or higher, you'll get $10 off your first purchase of official Unspeakable Podcast Nuanced AF merchandise. There are hats, shirts, mugs, thermoses, stickers, magnets, a baby onesie that is super cute because nothing's more nuanced than a baby. You can find all of that in the Nuance store on the show's website, theunspeakablepodcast.com. And also, if you are interested in Nuance, there's an interview with me in a recent issue of the digital magazine The Signal, where I talk about Nuance with Phoebe Maltz-Bovey, who's a former guest of this show. That magazine can be found at thesgnl.com. It's called The Signal. I'll be back next week with another super nuanced guest. In the meantime, thanks for listening. See you next time.
Blinded by Love and Worlds Apart, it's a new season of 90 Day Fiancé the Other Way. TLC is shaking up Sunday nights as all the drama heads overseas. Cheating scandals, culture clashes, and even a devastating hurricane won't stop these six couples from following their hearts. With everything on the line, can their love go the distance? 90 Day Fiancé the Other Way, every Sunday at 8, 7 Central on TLC. Set your DVR.
Cox can help make your home smarter and your life easier. Now you can use your Contour voice remote to connect to your home life cameras so you can view them right on your TV screen using simple voice commands. That makes it easy to keep tabs on what's happening around your home right from your couch. Need to keep an eye on the kids when they're playing outside? Just say, "Show me my backyard camera," into your Cox voice remote and watch them while you're in the house. And if you're waiting for a delivery and want to make sure it's there on time, no problem. Just say, show me Driveway Camera to check on it with your Home Life HD cameras on the TV screen while you go about your day. When you live in a home powered by Cox Internet, you can stay connected to what matters and let Cox take care of the rest. To learn more about all the benefits of your connected home, visit cox.com/thisishome today.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.